Good afternoon. Welcome to the second half of We the People Radio here on March 1st, 2026. It's been a trying year thus far, to put it mildly. Free advertisement of the week goes out to Hot Water Plumbing Hero. Yay. They're coming to our house tomorrow so we can have hot water after 10 days. I miss hot water.
It's kind of important.
I know. Yeah, there is nothing like washing your face with cold water at night before you go to bed.
Brr.
Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of things like that. None of them are good. Not relaxing. Anyway, so we're gonna hang out with them tomorrow and get our hot water back. Yay. Getting a new tooth on Wednesday. It's a red letter week. I'll let you know next Sunday how this all works out for us. We got our internet back Friday, though. No, Saturday. Got the internet back Saturday.
Yeah.
So, yeah, mostly, you know, I'd invite you over, but pretty much we don't have anything. So.
Yeah, I'm currently without internet at the place I live because I'm moving, and it's like,
yeah,
I have to sit here at the station and get my work done.
Yeah, or use your phone as a hotspot and all that, and that's real fun and everything, but not really. First world problems, I know, but still it's a pain. It just jams you up. So, today we are talking about the rescheduling implications of marijuana, but the better part is the implications for how it is currently handled, especially in states that have legalized either for, you know, fake medicine or for recreation, and what that would do if they reschedule it. Because as we learned in the first hour, which I hope you go back and listen to if you missed it, if they do that, it'll be the same as Tylenol with codeine. Well, sorry, can't go to a dope store and buy Tylenol with codeine. Whoops.
Yep.
So
depends on which dope store.
Yeah, we'll talk after the show.
Yeah, I guess it does. So anyway, our guest is Philip Drum. He is a PharmD, which is a doctor of pharmacy, as we learned. And his bio is on there. We've done a bunch of shows with him, and I hope you go and really get smart about this. We do have a tab at wethepeopleradio.us. We have a tab for pot. Pretty straightforward. Made it as obvious as possible. And there is a ton of information on there. So if you want to find out about the pesticides, oh, please go on there. I've got pictures I took myself of what's going on in these giant marijuana grows. If you want to look at the crime, go look at that. If you want to look at how they torture animals in the grows and cook them, yep, got photos of that. So if you don't care about pot, you don't care that people are high, you don't care about this, you don't care about that, how about people who eat dogs? You might care about that. That's happening right here in this country, an hour and a half of north of where I'm sitting right now. Not good. Mm-hmm. Not good. None of this stuff is good. It's not helping. Oh, I also updated the killers using pot list, by the way. Gosh, I forgot to promote that last week. I did update that. Yeah. It's a massive list. So, yeah, the whole idea that no one ever dies from marijuana use. This is a compendium of death and injury related to marijuana. So it's a condensed list of stabbers, mass murderers, and child killers. So we've got the stabbers, the mass murderers, the child killers, and then the links to all the articles proving that.
Well, it's been in the news last few weeks, the psychosis and a lot of the mental effects they're finding now. Well, I think they knew all along, but it's coming out.
It's harder to bury.
Yeah, it's harder to bury. I mean, it's coming out.
Well, you'd be surprised. You'd actually be surprised about how hard it is, how easy it is to bury it. Let me just give you a few examples. You guys are wisely pointing out, again, yeah, schizophrenia, depression.
Right.
Suicidal ideation and actually committing suicide. Marijuana is the number one substance of successfully fatally accomplished suicides in the state of Colorado. It's marijuana.
Still like a date rape drug, too, right?
Yeah. It's not nice. But the surprise is, get ready for this, coroners in Southern California are refusing to test the dead for THC. And I have that in writing.
Wow.
So, how nice is that, that it's ubiquitous and we're not going to test for it? So, you know, Rob Reiner can get stabbed to death by his son, who was a known marijuana user, and we're not going to test him. We're not going to test his hair. to see if he had been using marijuana in the 90 days prior to the murder. We're not going to do that because it's so ubiquitous. And but other states are, and but some states aren't. And we've got a couple. I know Rhode Island is another one that they are refusing to test and or provide us with the data when we've asked for, you know, toxicology reports, little fun things like that. Or they don't test for THC. A good one is a name that you may be familiar with, Thomas Crooks, who took a shot at Donald Trump when he was running last time in July of 2024. His toxicology report came back negative for everything, but they didn't test for THC.
Hmm.
How about that?
Gosh, yeah. That's handy.
That's just an oversight.
Yeah. And the fun part was they did admit that he had large amounts of lead, antimony, and selenium. And as a pharmacist, I know that marijuana is used as a phytoremediant to suck out of sound lead and other heavy metals. And so when you sell that product, that's one of the things they're supposed to be testing for, is to make sure that the product that they're selling you doesn't have high amounts of lead, because we know marijuana will suck it out of the ground. And there's papers out there that tell you that chronic users of cannabis have high lead levels. Comes up in your urine. And so Thomas Crooks had high lead levels, but they didn't test for THC, despite Allegheny County quoting that, yeah, we test for drugs and fentanyl, cocaine, and THC are three of our top drugs that we find. They didn't test for it in Thomas Crooks.
Well, wow. he was probably just eating lead paint chips off his front porch.
Yeah, when he was a child.
20 years old, and yeah, was probably licking lead paint every day.
I'm sure that's what it was.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
So let's go into the big lie about and I'll send you guys copies of those reports to be able to put on your pot page. Oh, I also wanted to let you know, make sure that you tap on the more section on the top of your header to be able to see then pot as an option, and then see those other options that you mentioned.
And I'm attaching it at the bottom of the page for today, too. I put the stabbers on there.
And I saw the one I took a peek at it before I came on today. I think you only had through 2021. There's a we've had a few years since 2021. I think you got a lot more.
I know. I've been waiting for a more comprehensive list. Nobody's really. It's coming out little by little by little, but it's just a time problem to go. I do have the names. I just don't have. Yeah, because we have Brian Koberger, the what do you call it, the Idaho guy.
Idaho.
Yep.
Yeah, four students in Idaho was a marijuana user. Yeah, in high school. We don't have the data on his recent use, but you know, we do know that he was a heroin user, and people don't fall out of bed and start using heroin. So we did have the data that he was a chronic marijuana user before he went into heroin. But he did supposedly then, you know, stop his heroin use. But did he stop his THC use? That I don't know. So let's kind of go into that issue about, though, the big lie that, it's a CS1 substance, and we got to get it out of CS1 because you can't study it.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Right. They do always say
Sorry. Let's tell the truth here. Okay? So we go to the website called reporter.nih.gov. Okay? NIH as in national, I as in institution, H as in health. So reporter.nih.gov. And you can do your own search. I did. And I searched did a search for marijuana or cannabis. And what this does is it's a website. It's a database of the National Institute of Health funded research projects, contracts, and publications for all fiscal years. I looked at it since 1985. It goes back 1985 to now. And again, you find that at reporter.nih.gov. And it lists the projects and contracts and publications funded by other governments are not there, or pharmaceutical industry is not there. Okay? But these are the ones funded by our government, the National Institute of Health. and various agencies within our federal system. So, for example, Veterans Administration. They also have their own funding, but we also fund the VA through this as well with research projects. So when I put in marijuana or cannabis and said, I want to see all years since 1985, guess how many projects came up? Remember, it's been a CS1 substance since 1970, so you can't study it. How many studies do you think I found with the heading marijuana or cannabis?
Hmm. Well, you can't study it, so probably none.
How about 11,309?
Yeah.
I did it just this morning. So it's a tad bit higher, and all of those haven't been done, you know, in the last week. This has been going on since 1985. And how much would you guess the U.S. government has funded for these studies?
God.
Oh.
11,000 of them.
Oh, God.
Millions.
Wait, are these studies like the transgender mice type studies? Because that's in the millions every time.
Anything dealing with marijuana or cannabis, if they happen to look, you know, that they're using that substance to perform a study, to look for, you know, oh, it works for pain, or oh, it works for my glaucoma, or it decreases my seizures. Again, looking for marijuana or cannabis, 11,309 projects at a cost of?
$1 zillion?
Drum roll, please. Uh-huh. I'm rolling around. $4.7 billion with a B.
Oh, my
dollars.
God.
To be exact, $4,788,591,215. Okay, so $4.7 billion, but we remember.
I can hear my wallet crying.
We can't study it.
We all paid for that, by the way. Let's not let that slide away.
61 VA institutions have been involved in this.
Sure.
VA, as in Long Beach, San Diego, Palo Alto, San Francisco, Puget Sound, Connecticut, Pittsburgh, and Ann Arbor. So, again, go to the NIH reporter. Get the truth, not the lies. That we have been studying it. Let me just give you a comparison, and this is what I was going to share with the DEA judge when that lie came up. I was going to say, you know, judge, hey, let's kind of compare it to other real drugs, you know, the ones that have been approved by the FDA, because, you know, you do the studies, you show that it is medicine through the study, and it gets approved by the FDA. That's how it works, right? So let's take a drug called, oh, I don't know, morphine. When I did this report back in November 2024, prior to me being selected to go give talk to the judge about this, there were 9,700. At that time, there were over 10,800 cannabis or marijuana, marijuana or cannabis. So again, relative, kind of close, 9,700, but the cost difference was $2.8 billion. How about ibuprofen? You guys know ibuprofen, right?
Sure.
1,100 studies.
Wow.
At $320 million. Okay? And that's FDA approved, right? It's over the counter even. How about penicillin? 2,982 studies at a cost of $1.1 billion. How about omeprazole? The people are having a little GI discomfort and have an ulcer. You get omeprazole, which is now over the counter. There were 387 studies at a cost of $85 million. 387 studies, $85 million. How about semaglutide, also known as Ozempic, right? That's a drug in the news, right? Everybody's getting Ozempic now to lose weight. 79 NIH studies.
79.
It has multiple FDA-approved indications at a cost of $57 million.
Well, it's a good thing. It's a good thing we can't really study it, considering how much money we're spending. Imagine if we could study it.
So
my God.
We've spent $4.7 billion and have not one FDA-approved indication for marijuana or cannabis.
after billions.
These other drugs have been studied at much lower costs, much lower numbers, and they have been approved.
Huh.
Kind of following the issue here of what may be the problem?
Yes. It sounds like lying. I have two tremendous songs all set up for lying. We're working on lying today now, again. Hey, and I just want you to know I switched the tabs around on the site, so pot is now sandwiched in between gas crisis and wolves.
Yay!
So we have gas crisis, pot, and then wolves. Then you tap the more button, and you can you can read about the transgender thing, environmental craziness, China, South Africa, Islam, national security. Yep, we got all the hot topics here. We'll be right back here. A couple songs for you on lying. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at
wethepeopleradio.us.
You've been talking in your sleep, and it's been going on for weeks, and I've been solving puzzle pieces. High time to come to Jesus. You got skeletons in your closet, spitting all over your face. Every little lie stacked so high, can't keep your story straight.
Yes.
Yes, they're very good
that
at it.
That is
too.
Going to be the state anthem here pretty quick. Forgot to do it at the beginning of the hour, but please seriously go look at the Gas Crisis tab on the website. The fast way to get there is gascrisis.org, because they're going to try to paint this as Donald Trump attacked Iran and
now our gas prices are going up, except yeah. They've been going up for weeks.
Yeah, people haven't really noticed, and it's going to look like something that isn't. And bottom line is it has been avoidable, but it's becoming less able to be avoidable if we don't get our act together. So, back to marijuana with Phil Drum.
Price of marijuana is not going to go up, is it?
No, actually, it's been going down because, again, there have been expansive grows, as you all know about up there in Northern California,
yeah.
and driving the price down because there's so much of it. And it's leaving the state, which is, of course, illegal, federally illegal. Not sure why the federal government isn't blocking that.
Yeah, no kidding.
And we've heard that, 60% of the U.S. is coming out of California, marijuana use.
And it would be so easy to do. I mean, just a short campaign, maybe a month, you could clean all that up.
Yeah, but who's enforcing it? Think about it. You've got the Highway Patrol. Well, the governor controls the Highway Patrol.
State police.
The state police, the Highway Patrol. So, then you've got Fish and Game, also controlled by the state. You have all these different entities, and the state has done an amazing job, especially up north where it has just proliferated. Again, if you'd like to go see pictures, lots of them, and lots of them I took myself. You would not believe the miles and miles and miles and miles of illegal. There's nothing legal there. No home permits, no well permits, all, and no commercial growing allowed.
Now, I saw
you got miles of greenhouses.
I saw a story out of Southern California where they were touting how the sheriff's department went out, and they busted two big greenhouses down
there. Oh, my God.
Yeah, they had two. And they were really proud that they were able to find these two greenhouses.
Yeah.
I was flying out of my chair when I saw that. I was like, what are you guys doing? Why don't you come up here and we'll show you thousands?
Well, honestly, I've flown over them three or four different times anyway, taken video, lots of still photos.
And just ballpark number of greenhouses?
I don't know. At one point, there were like 5,000 of them.
Yeah.
Stretching for miles.
It's not like you can hide those.
You kind of can from the ground. It's interesting. It looks very different from the ground than it does from the air. And I get that. But bottom line is they're traveling on the roadways. They're,
yeah.
they're not traveling by air. They're not being teleported into no. other states. They're,
no,
they're going
by
truck.
I think the federal government has some kind of aircraft that they could probably fly over and see where they are and then go get them.
Yeah, we could get into that on a different day, but it would have to be a major military operation. It's a little harder to roll that up than than people
well,
would
when
think.
When they've gotten
but,
so out of control, I mean, yeah, there's a lot
remember
of people.
That, remember the so Dr. Trump, Bill and I were big crime fighters. So we're headed up to Susanville, so east of Reading. We're headed up there on a, just a two-lane highway, and there's a – there's a rider truck in front of us with a dirty minivan in front and a dirty minivan in back. And it's like, wow, that thing looks overloaded. So we figure, somebody's moving or something and loaded their truck wrong. And I was like, wait a second.
Wait.
Everybody's passing except the dirty minivans. They stayed where they were. We were five or six cars back. And it's like, I'll bet you money those are the guards for the dope that's in that big rider truck.
Yep.
So we waited and, finally we were the car behind the last dirty minivan. And as we go by, sure enough, big, giant, scary cartel-looking guys in there. They were the guards for it.
Yep.
So as we went through Susanville, we pulled in to go pick up some lamb at the butcher shop and walked in there. And who was standing there? The sheriff. Score. We said, hey, like 20 minutes behind us, there's two dirty minivans and a rider truck coming through with a zillion pounds of dope.
I don't think they're hauling furniture.
That was a few years ago, so... See, everyone can be a crime fighter. Let that inspire you. Back to our guest.
Well, so now that we've heard the great story on how many projects our government tax dollars have paid for, again, 11,000.
Oh, yes.
For marijuana or cannabis at a cost of $4.7 billion. So the next time you guys talk to Donald Trump, please remind him of that fact, okay? Let's also point out something else. There are two FDA-approved distinct phytocannabinoids that have been FDA-approved. Remember, Delta-9 THC, dronabinol, marinol, which doesn't use you very much, was approved back in 1985. I used it on some cancer patients, found it not to be very effective as an anti-emetic, meaning nausea and vomiting. We've gotten much better medication since then that don't have people seeing dancing elephants, as the first woman that I gave it to told me she was seeing. And CBD got approved in 2018. Cannabidiol also got approved, again, by the Food and Drug Administration after having undergone the rigorous scientific studies that I'm talking about here.
Yeah.
Marijuana has undergone these studies and have yet to receive one not one FDA-approved indication. So let's talk about, something called PubMed, which is the National Library of Medicine, which is also under the National Center for Biotechnology Information. It contains biomedical literature from Medline, life science journals, and online books, okay? And do the fun search called Medical Marijuana, and let's see how many articles have been written that can be found on PubMed regarding medical marijuana. And so this goes back to 1945, that there was one article in 1945. And as the decades went along, prior to 2000, there was a maximum of about 80 in 1998 studies on medical marijuana. So it was under 100 articles per year prior to 2000. And then we know what happened, here in California in 1996, right? And so the fraud started coming out of medical marijuana. And so in 2001 to 2012, prior to the first states legalizing it for recreational use, the number of studies doubled per year. And so they went up to about 185 per year, okay? Studies being written in PubMed on medical marijuana. And so in 2013, which was after the year after the first states got approved, Colorado and Washington, there were 254, okay, articles. And that it peaked in 2019 at 945 reports. Okay? So again, if we're lying and saying that we can't study it and can't write papers on it, well, there's proof that you can.
Yeah.
As a CS1 substance. And that it peaked in 2019. Now, what I find really interesting about 2019 is we had a former senator named Feinstein and another senator who's still around named Cornyn that were pushing this lie that we need to have more readily available marijuana to be able to do the research. And the little hang-up is that they had to get it out of the federal facility in Mississippi. And Mississippi has the Mississippi labs, which were creating the federal supply of marijuana, which was used in these studies that supposedly weren't being done, but really were, as I gave you the numbers of them. And they were getting it out of Mississippi labs. Okay? So in 2019, they approved this bill to increase and make it easier to be able to create marijuana, because the marijuana industry, right, is making this marijuana, but they can't be used in the studies because, as you guys have already pointed out, it contains heavy metals, pesticides, and what percentage is it, and all that type of fun stuff. And so they always had to get the study drug out of the Mississippi lab. So they said, look, we're going to allow you guys to grow, but you have to follow all the rules of the Mississippi lab. And so they approved the monies to do this. And you want to know what happened to the number of studies after 2019? They all went down.
I was going to say they all went away.
They didn't go up. We would have thought that, oh, boy, now we've got more more places making it, and we're going to have more studies. No, it peaked in 2019. And so that was 945, as I said. These are the number of reports in PubMed. Then it went down to 919 in 2020. 2021 went down to 874. 2022 went down to 798. 2023 went down to 674. Hmm. A drop by a third. Went from 900 to 600. Now, 2024 went back up to 795, and 2025 is 779. But that's below 945, isn't it? Okay. 779 for last year.
Mm-hmm.
So being that we made it more readily available for they could do their, you know, grow it and be able to use it from those facilities, is that happening? The number of reports is going down. You know why?
Oops.
Because we got it recreational. We don't need to be doing studies.
We need to do studies.
That was just another lie that we've caught them in, right? That, oh, we can't do the studies because we can't get it from... No. Now you have the ability to grow it. You just aren't doing it because it's too onerous. All the regulatory requirements that making medicinal marijuana requires, using that medicinal marijuana is really down. The studies of reports of medicinal marijuana are going down. Maybe it also has something to do with all those nasty adverse effects that are showing up.
Yeah, talk about that. I mean, the story I saw here a couple of weeks ago, I can't remember who the doctor was they had on there, but was pretty vehement about how bad the effects are and what's happening to the young folks that are partaking in marijuana. I mean, the psychosis and the paranoia and all the bad things.
Yeah, cannabis use disorder is climbing. That's when you're continuing to use a substance, even though you know it's bad for you. Again, those numbers are climbing. Again, we know it affects smoking. Is not good for you.
No.
I just saw a report yesterday. What's the best thing you can do, you know, health-wise? And it's don't smoke. And mm-hmm. that goes for nicotine, tobacco, or cannabis.
Right.
Although, you know, you don't smoke. I mean, it affects your heart, your lungs, your immune system, a whole host of things. It's
sure.
not good for you. And this one affects your mind really bad.
And the number of people that are taking it or smoking it has gone skyrocketed.
It's going up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And what I'd like to do now, too, is kind of talk about this fraudulent document that was created by Health and Human Services back in 2024, which kind of prompted me into volunteering myself to go speak to the DEA judge when they were considering moving it from a CS1 to a CS3. I don't know, do you guys want to take a break now? And then I can get into, there's 8 factors the Health and Human Service Secretary and the Attorney General must consider for scheduling a substance. And I'll roll through those 8 and then talk about the 5-part test for designating a drug as a medicine and how they fraudulently generated this report to fit these criteria.
Okay, yeah, let's take an early break and then we'll hit those. We won't have to get interrupted.
Music,
yeah, I don't have any music yet.
Oh, I do. Oh, okay, sorry. It's an easy one. I couldn't decide if I want to do science or doctors, so I'll go one of each.
There you go.
All right, we got the doctor song. So this is how it's supposed to work, but the medical marijuana industry has they're not doing any of this that you're going to hear. So we're going to come back, talk some more with Phil Drum. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I went to my family doctor for a pain inside my head. I told him that since you left me, I was feeling like just about dead. Well, doctor, what can you give me? And could I take one or two? Can you tell me just what it's gonna do? Will it save me from what I'm going through? Will it ease the pain? Will it ease the pain? Will it help to pacify my brain?
Blinded by science, I'm on the run. I'm worried about the world that we live in. I'm worried about all the confusion. I wonder about the lies I've been reading. I wonder where this madness is leading. Is this a road going nowhere? Is someone leading us somewhere?
Yeah, we dream about being blinded by science. It's unlikely to happen soon. Okay.
But you can trust the science.
Yeah, of course.
All right, let's go through our list.
Yeah, so let's kind of start with just a step back. Again, we're talking about controlled substance and moving it from a CS1 to a CS3. And who kind of controls that? And the way it's supposed to work is that these 8 factors that Health and Human Science Secretary, HHS Secretary, and I think we all know who that is now, and the Attorney General must consider for scheduling a substance. Okay, so we have to have the science side, and we have to have the DOJ side, okay, if you will. And it's actually, the Controlled Substance Act is actually under the Department of Justice. Okay, so if you've got the HHS that's creating something that's saying, yeah, we think it's okay, without any FDA-approved indication, now it kind of got thrown into the lap of the DOJ. And what happened is that back in 2024 when this happened, the HHS secretary had an undersecretary write up this report. And I'll kind of point out some of the things that were in there that were kind of very, 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 very questionable. It got bounced over to the DOJ side. And they were the last stand, about moving it from a 1 to a 3 at that time. And, the person that was in charge of the DOJ that was responsible for this said, okay, we have to have a judicial review of this information. And that's where, again, people could volunteer in to kind of point out the issues of what was being recommended here to the judge. And, what happened was that the judge then kind of moved the date as to when they were going to discuss it. They were going to originally discuss it in January 2025, and then it got moved to January 20th. And I said, oh, that's it. it's not going to move forward with the Biden administration now because Trump is coming into office, and this is all going to go down the toilet. And it did. Okay? Because everything that the Biden administration wanted to do was stopped. Okay? So, therefore, what it came out in 2024 got stopped in 2025 because of a new administration. Now, the scary part is now you're hearing it kind of being revoiced again. Again, I don't know if this is ultimately going to come forward with moving it from a 1 to a 3, but you've heard the support for this. So, here's the 8 factors the HHS Secretary and the Attorney General, the DOJ side, must consider for scheduling the substance. 1, the drug actual or relative potential for abuse, scientific evidence of its pharmacologic effect, the state of current scientific knowledge regarding the drug or other substance, its history and current pattern of abuse, the scope, duration, and significance of abuse, what, if any, risk there is to the public health, its psychic or physiological dependence liability, and whether the substance is an immediate precursor of a substance already controlled. Okay? So that's dealing with the controlled substance side. There is a 5-part test for designating a drug as a medicine. And since 1992, the DEA, Drug Enforcement Agency, has determined that a drug has a currently accepted medical use only if the FDA has approved the drug for marketing. As we know, marijuana and or cannabis, whatever you want to call it, doesn't have that, right? There's no FDA approval for it. Because, again, remember, marijuana or cannabis is over 100 different cannabinoids. Over 100 different cannabinoids. And the marijuana industry wants you to believe that they're all very important. So what I would ask them to tell me is, we know what they are, what the pharmacokinetics and absorption and the dose is for 2 of them, Delta-9 THC and CBD. What about the other 100 plus? I want to know about number 98. What's the dose of number 98? What are the drug-drug interactions for cannabinoid number 67? What's the potential pregnancy risk with cannabinoid number 55? All of these things would be in a package insert that I would receive as a pharmacist with following the FDA approval. Nothing of which we have.
Right.
We don't have the 100-plus cannabinoids identified. But, again, the marijuana industry wants you to know that, oh, you know, that dronabinol, that's crap. It doesn't work. It's only Delta-9 THC. We really need the whole product to get that whole effect. Kind of sounds suspicious to you?
Yes.
And so, again, they want the whole product. They don't want dronabinol. They don't want CBD, which have already been FDA approved. So, it has to have FDA approval, and it's not. Or meets the 5-part test that tracks with core standards developed under the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. So what are those 5 parts? The drug's chemistry must be known and reproducible, number 1. All right, so now it's reproducible. So we need to have the same amount of cannabinoid 67 in all the products. The same amount of cannabinoid 98 in the products. We need to know the chemistry. How does it get absorbed? How does it get distributed? How does it get eliminated for each of those over 100 cannabinoids? There must be adequate safety studies. Don't have them yet. There must be adequate and well-controlled studies providing efficacy or proving efficacy that it works. The drug must be accepted by qualified experts. And number 5, the scientific evidence must be widely available. Okay, so those 5 things. And so their claim is that, you know, we just need to approve it. And here's the cannabis has a low potential for abuse compared with other substances. Right? You hear them say that. This is not heroin. Oh, my God. You know, it's not morphine, which is a CS2. You know, it's on the level of a Tyco number 3. Okay, we'll give you that. Originally, they didn't even want it to be a controlled substance. There's an arm of these people that think that it shouldn't be a controlled substance at all.
Oh, no, because it's all natural.
It is addictive. Yeah. It is addictive, and you do go through withdrawal symptoms. It just takes longer because it's a fat-soluble molecule, and fat-soluble molecules take longer to leave your body. But it's still in your body. And, again, as we mentioned before, 60% of your brain is fat, fatty tissue. So guess where it's residing? In your brain.
Which explains the psychosis and...
Yep. And so, again, when they say, well, you know, it's coming out, and my favorite is what they want to say, it's coming out in my urine, and it's a non-psychoactive metabolite, okay, the carboxy metabolite. It's not psychoactive. Well, what they fail to acknowledge is that the other main metabolite coming out of your urine is the hydroxy, and the hydroxy metabolite is actually more psychotropic than delta-9 THC is. So we can forget that, that the hydroxy is more psychotropic than the parent compound, and focus on, well, you can't be testing for the carboxy in my urine because that's not psychoactive. Okay, well, then explain to me how you create that THC backbone molecule, because your body does not have that. Your body has what's called an anandamide, and it looks nowhere close to THC. And we actually have anandamide receptors, but they've called them, unfortunately, cannabinoid receptors because they knew the molecule of THC before we found the anandamide in the body in the 1990s. And so the bottom line is you don't make carboxy THC without having THC in the body. Get it?
Right.
Mm. And so if carboxy is still coming out in the urine a week later, that means you still have THC in your body. And as we just mentioned, guess where it is? It's in your brain. It's in your brain and slowly leaching out of your brain. So, again, they want to claim that it has a low abuse potential. Well, they're kind of neglecting that we're having some emerging trends in cannabis use, and a high prevalence of cannabis use disorder is now occurring in heavy or long-term users. And the proportion of individuals with cannabis use disorder related to the effective comparator substance, they're not comparing it to other substances. We love to talk about, you know, alcohol, right? Let's compare it to alcohol. Okay, so far more people drank alcohol in the past month. About 137 million people had, you know, tasted alcohol, compared to now maybe 42 million using cannabis in the last month. But that has gone up dramatically, right? We've known that, you know, 99 to 2022, the rate of rise of cannabis use has gone up quite a bit. Whereas daily or near daily alcohol users back in 1992 were about 8.9 million people. Cannabis users were like about 1 million, 0.9 million. When they did repeated the study in 2022, daily or near daily users of cannabis is now 17 million.
Oh, wow.
So it went from 1 million to 17, and alcohol is at 14.7.
And that's as of 2022.
Correct. And we know that there's been somebody out there, and I think we can be suspicious as to who's been helping promote a lot of the how bad alcohol is information.
Yeah.
And it's been swinging younger generations then into using marijuana. And in 2022, the past month, cannabis users were 7.4 times more likely to report daily use, 28.2%, than alcohol consumers at 3.8%. We're talking daily use. Mm. So, again, cannabis use among adolescents and young adults is about 16.5%, is converging with alcohol use disorder at 16.4%. And again, we have the DSM-5 criteria for continued use. Again, this is cannabis use disorder. Is you continue to use despite physiologic or psychologic problems, was many times more higher among those with cannabis use disorder at 31.9%, compared with disorders of alcohol use at 5.7. So, again, that they're continuing to use it despite them having mental problems. Let's compare that to prescription opioid use, 7.3, cocaine use, 9.7. So again, nationally, the data suggests that as many as 30% of those who use cannabis may develop cannabis use disorder. 30%.
Wow.
Minors developing cannabis use disorder is at twice the rate of adults.
Yes.
So let's think about that when we want to talk about has a low abuse potential and needs to be a CS3, let's look at that. Let's look at the impairment of motor vehicles and driving traffic fatalities involving marijuana, how marijuana used to be around 9% of fatal crashes back in 2000, and now it's around 21% in 2018 and higher. And we have poly drug use now that's really, really increasing. And so, again, we have all these calls into poison control centers that they just want to ignore. Children, having its use, but because the parents are leaving their gummies around and they think it's candy. These types of things happening. I talked about, cannabis currently has an accepted medical use in treatment of the United States. They want to make that claim. Again, only 2% of providers are recommending this. 2%. And when they looked at it, what was the degree for these people? You do recognize you can have other people that can prescribe medication now, right? Beyond an MD, right? We have nurse practitioners, physician assistants.
Oh, yeah.
Nurses now can recommend, but they found that 53% are MDs. So 47% are not medical doctors that are recommending cannabis. Okay? Again, we also know that if they want to call it medicine, as you pointed out, what's the dose? What's the frequency? What's the composition? Is this going to be a rectal suppository of cannabis, a vaginal insert of cannabis?
We should make it be that, and everybody would stop using it. Well, I don't know.
And the reality is when you do that, we have to know, again, what's the dose? How does it get eliminated? What's the frequency?
Sure.
What's the, for an indication, when was the last time you were told, here, just go pick up this medication and figure out what the dose is?
Right. Right.
The doctor tells you, you take one of these tablets that's 12.5 milligrams once a day or twice a day. Whatever. It's not like, go talk to the bed tender and he'll figure it out for you. We find that they're not warning. We find that they're giving it to pregnant women, which is a major no-no.
Yeah.
I don't give foxglove to a patient for digoxin. I don't pull up a plant and hand it to them and say, here you go, here's your antiarrhythmic drug. So there's huge problems with them trying to pretend that a plant is medicine. Let's find out what's the dose, what's the frequency. What are the drug-drug interactions? When's the last time the bud tenders told you about that? And again, remember, if you're made a CS3 substance, that bud tender gets to look and see all the other drugs, the controlled substances that you're on. Because he's going to have to look at that prescription drug monitoring profile. And now we get to find out who's recommending this. Remember, it's a recommendation. It's not a prescription.
Well, no, but it still, I would think, makes them somewhat liable for any negative consequences if they give that.
Yeah, what is the liability on all? What, you have huge liability.
That's why they did that. That they're not, it's a mere recommendation. You don't have to take that.
No.
I get it.
Yeah, we didn't tell them to take it. We just, we
recommend. And they're not required to inform the patient of risks or adverse effects. They're not required to do that like they are with medication. Right? When we give the medication out, we got that list of all the side effects. They fight every time we try to put any mental health disorder has to be put on, their product. They fight tooth and nail to not allow that. They don't want to put that impairs driving. They don't want to tell you how long the driving impairment is, hours, and that you can't identify if you're unable to be that you're impaired. They've tested this in simulated driving, and they think they're safe to drive after 30 minutes, and 90 minutes later, 3 hours later, they're still impaired, mm-hmm. and they think they're okay to drive.
Their
ability to determine their impairment, they've proven multiple times in scientific studies they can't do it.
Yeah.
They can't tell their own impairment.
So if they reschedule it, does that change the liability issue?
A recommendation.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so you go to your doctor and you get a recommendation.
Doomed.
Yeah.
Boys, we have to run away. We have 30 seconds. Right. Phil Drum, thanks a million zillion.
Oh, thank you.
Everything is linked.
Very, very informative.
At We the People Radio. Welcome to the Twilight Zone.